most powerful radio is pleased to present Church of the Masses with award-winning Catholic columnist, screenwriter, and media consultant, Barbara Nicolosi.
And hello, welcome back to Church of the Masses Radio on the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network. Thanks very much for tuning in.
Hello again.
Welcome to our second show. Still very new at this, still working out all the kinks, but thank you very much. And sorry about that. We're still working out the kinks here at the station, but welcome back. And we're here to talk about media and culture from a faith perspective. My thing is that I am a college professor, but I've been a screenwriter. I've worked in Hollywood for 23 years. I've been a production company executive. I'm a member of the Writers Guild of America. I've written about 10 feature screenplays. I've worked on documentaries. I've executive produced web series, and I've produced theater. So I've been in this world for a long time, and I was a columnist for 4 years for Ligurian magazine, and then for a few years for the National Catholic Register, talking about media issues. So I've been thinking about this topic of how faith intersects with culture for about 25 years now, and so very happy to have you join in the conversation. Really excited about today's show. We are going to be discussing a new movie that's going to open in theaters this week on Tolkien. It's called Tolkien. The not very original title, but there it is. So Tolkien, about the writer J.R.R. Tolkien, who wrote The Hobbit and who wrote the Lord of the Rings trilogy. So I went last night to the premiere here in Hollywood and went with a friend of mine who happens to be a world-renowned expert in Tolkien and C.S. Lewis and their friendship in the group The Inklings, which was their writers group. So Dr. Diana Glyer is going to be with us in our second and third segments. We're going to talk about the movie that we saw, what it got right, what it got wrong, and whether we think it's worth you plunking down $14 or whatever and going to see it this weekend. But I'm going to start off here, as I usually do, kind of surveying the news in terms of the culture this week. And you know, one thing I noticed this week was a study that came out, and a very interesting study that was done by the, a professor of developmental health, Christine Kasel, and she from Virginia Tech University. So the study just came out this week. And basically the study was asking how many people are actually gay in our society. What is the sexual identity of people? And really interestingly, they came up with basically that for men, the number of people who are homosexual is 2.4%. And for women, it's 1.5%. So this is, you know, they put emerging this and experimenting that. But really, those are the numbers, 2.4% and 1.5%. I was really interested when I saw this study from Virginia Tech University. And so then I kind of Googled around to see what the percentage of characters on television are who are homosexual. And what a shock. Last year, annual How Are We Doing from the LGBTQ movement, which monitors these things, put out that last year had the record high GLAAD, which is the organization that monitors the presence of homosexuals on television and in the media. They said we can report an all-time high in 2018 of 8.8% of characters on television were gay. So there it is. You know, if you think you're going crazy that every other character in the movies and on television is gay, and that it just seems like, wow, that doesn't seem like real life, you're right. It isn't like real life. It's being programmed in. You're being told this reality is all being manufactured to make it seem like everyone is struggling with their sexual identity, when in fact, I mean, we're talking under 2% of women and 2.4% of men actually in the general population. So it really makes me mad that this phenomenon is just being shoved at us on every show. Has to have its mandatory gay couple. It used to be a gay character. Now it's a gay couple in a, you know, in a monogamous relationship, etc. So just to show you, it's not real. And those two studies show that. So Another thing I wanted to point to this week was talk about movie to movement. So Unplanned, what a great name for a movie. So much Unplanned has happened because of Unplanned. And one of the big things of Unplanned was that now Abby Johnson has become a general in the pro-life movement in a way that she really wasn't before. I mean, she was somebody we admired. We were aware of her. But so just to tell you something that happened this week was we had this very odd story in the media of a Pennsylvania state representative named Brian Sims, who himself is a homosexual, and he is very much he's an escort for Planned Parenthood, and he's very proud of it. So he put on Twitter a selfie video of him harassing for about, oh my goodness, it goes on and on. It's like at least 5 minutes long, him harassing an elderly woman pro-lifer who was quietly saying her rosary in front of the clinic. And this guy goes ballistic on this elderly woman, making fun of her, mocking her, trying to get her to, ridiculing her, calling her somebody that's making women, making babies die because they're going to be born and then they're going to be left to die. I mean, he goes on and on and on. So this guy was very proud of this, and he posted up to Twitter. And so pro-life Twitter, Christian Twitter, conservative Twitter, gave the circulation to this, and people were horrified that a man who is a Pennsylvania state representative was putting himself out there like this. This guy Brian Sims. So then they did a little homework, and they found out he'd done it before, and he'd done it with teenagers. So they found another selfie video he did where there were three young women, teenagers, that were also praying in front of the abortion clinic there in Philadelphia. And he did the same thing to them. And then after he harassed them, he went and said, I want everybody, if anybody knows who these people are, I want to know their name. It's called doxing. And then we're going to go to their house and we're going to harass them at their homes. This is illegal, by the way, to dox someone like that. So this caused even more outrage. Well, back to Abby Johnson. She saw this happening, and she said, great, I'm going to go to Philadelphia to that very clinic, and we're going to have a demonstration on Friday. And this is happening tomorrow, May 10th, in Philadelphia let me see if I can find the exact location here for you. Oh, yeah, it's at 12th and Locust Street at the Planned Parenthood in Philadelphia, 12th and Locust Streets, from 11 to noon. They're going to have a massive demonstration. Abby Johnson has called for thousands of people to show up and to highlight the fact that this clinic is a disgrace and that they have failed many of their health inspections. Like at least 10 of their health inspections they've failed. They've had a terrible record of harming the women who come to them for abortions. And so what's funny here is that Brian Sims thought he was venting in his selfie Twitter video, and it's now movie to movement, right? Abby Johnson, because of her fame through Unplanned, is able to commandeer thousands of people. And then she said, yesterday, you know what? Everybody ought to do this in their local Planned Parenthood. So tomorrow, all over the country, people are going to be turning out at Planned Parenthood to picket and in support of these pro-life people whose constitutional rights were threatened by Brian Sims. We have a constitutional right to assembly and to protest peacefully. And for him to harass these people while they were doing that is against our Constitution. So anyway, I'm going to be standing out in front of Glendora tomorrow at 8 to 9 a.m. My friend and I are going to be walking around saying the rosary at the Planned Parenthood Abortion Clinic here in Glendora, California. So feel free to come join me. But turn out wherever you are. Just make a visit. Go and pray in solidarity with our fellow pro-lifers who were so horribly harassed. But you just got to love the media thing there that, again, Abby Johnson wrote her book about her life. She had no idea what was going to happen, and that God has now raised her up through this movie, which, by the way, has just about reached $18 million, which is astounding for a little movie of this nature with no stars. So she's now been raised up, and she's become a general in this movement, and good for her, huh? So the next thing I want to talk about is my friends at the Greenhouse Productions are having their annual casting It's a group of Christians here in Hollywood, and if you go to greenhouseproductions.com, they have annual productions where they put a bunch of Christians coming together, and they let actors audition, they bring in writers, they look at their scripts, and then they produce something together. It's called a greenhouse. You know, we're actually going to do something together instead of just coming together and complaining about media and culture. We're going to make something. So I just wanted to point to that. If you are a writer or an actor and you want to throw your hat in the ring and see if you've got the chops, check out greenhouseproductions.com. Go to their events and click on that. And then, see what they're doing. And now it's like if you say, wow, I would love to be part of this industry. Well, here's a way in for you. Cool news to report that Church of the Masses is growing. We just added 3 more stations this week, thanks to the efforts of our general here, Terry Barber. And he was on a show, somebody in Illinois, I believe. And the next thing we know, we're adding 3 more stations to our list. So I don't know what the number is now, but it's growing all the time. So I'm very happy to be part of this new Catholic station and the impact that it's having. And so we're looking for sponsors. If you have a thing, if you have a book, if you have a ministry, if you have something cool you're doing, especially in media, and you would like to get the word out, yeah, we can. We'll make you a really good deal to sponsor this show, to sponsor a part of the show, a segment, or the whole show. And so just send me a message on Facebook. We have the Church of the Masses Facebook page, and just send us a message there, and we'll get in touch with you. And we'd love to add you to our list of sponsors, which right now is extremely elite, very elite. But we need to get the word out, and we are slowly but surely doing that. So now I want to just kind of set up that as we head into our first break here, because we're going to be interviewing Dr. Diana Glier about this movie Tolkien. So I invite you to if you're interested in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, if you're interested in Tolkien, if you're one of those groupies, you want to be listening for the next half hour, because we're going to do a whole, you know, treatment of the movie and what we thought of it. We went to the premiere last night and all the stars were there, and a lot of people dressed like elves and things. It's not quite my crowd. Fantasy movies is not really my thing. I like movies with people in them, as opposed to hobbits and orcs and things like that. Having said that, I cannot deny the tremendous impact that Tolkien's work has had and how powerful it has been in the lives of so many people. Having said that, so Diane and I went there. We sat there. We watched the film with it was a full screening room, so several thousand people. And so we're going to talk about what we thought of the movie and whether it's worth you going to see this weekend. So this is Church of the Masses. This is what I do here. We look at the intersection of faith and culture. The name of the show, Church of the Masses, comes from a quote someone sent me years ago of a 1930s theater critic who said, "The theaters are the new church of the masses. They are places where people sit in the dark and listen to people in the light tell them what it is to be human." And unfortunately, that's true for way too many people, that the culture now is the place that they go to find the meaning of life, to find out what they should be doing, what they should be valuing. What we want to do here is be a little more circumspect about this Church of the Masses, the cult popular culture. And so my goal is to help you know what's out there that's good, that's worth your time and the investment of your resources and support, but then also to say, okay, wow, I should be doing something myself. I should be somebody who is making culture, throwing my hat in the ring for the people of my time. So that's what we're all about here, and we look forward to talking to Dr. Glier as we go ahead. So stay tuned for more Church of the Masses.
This is Terry Barber reminding you there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity. Be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151.
In Luke 7, Jesus said, "I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven her, because she has been shown great love." According to St. John of the Cross, Christians should always remember that the value of their good works is not based on number and excellence. Their value is based on the love for God that prompts them to do the works. May we always be motivated by true love for God and not worry so much about what we do, but why we do it.
Or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello. Clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello again. Welcome back to Church of the Masses Radio. Here's where we talk about the intersection of faith and culture. My name is Barbara Nicolosi. I've been a professor of cinema. I'm now a professor of great books at Azusa Pacific University, but my background is in writing. It's in screenwriting. I'm a member of the Writers Guild of America. I've been a producer. I've written many feature screenplays. I've worked on documentaries. I've produced theater. So my other thing is culture and making culture. And so the show is about identifying projects that intersect with people of faith's interests. And then also encouraging people of faith to throw their hat in the ring and stop just criticizing from the outside, but maybe start making some culture. But today we're going to criticize here a little bit. We have a movie in the theaters this weekend. It's opening. It's called Tolkien. And before I went to see it last night, I noticed that the reviews were distinctly mixed, that on Rotten Tomatoes, the movie has a score of 48 from the critics, which is pretty bad. Out of a possible 100, it's getting a 48%. But I thought, well, you know, this guy is a hero to us, people of faith, so let's give it a shot and see. So we're going to spend basically the rest of the show talking about this movie, and then the last segment I'm going to talk about the pitfalls of biopics, the problem of doing true stories in the movies, and especially hero stories like this Tolkien one is. But we have a really special guest with us today to help us kind of figure out whether this movie is worth you plunking down $15 and 2 hours of your life this weekend. So Dr. Diana Glier is a very good friend of mine. She is a world-renowned expert in Tolkien and C.S. Lewis and their group, The Inklings. In fact, she has a book called Bandersnatch, which is on Amazon.com, which is about this amazing collaboration, The Inklings, that produced some of the greatest writing by Christians in the 20th century. So very happy to welcome Dr. Glier with us. Hi, Diana.
Hey, how are you doing, Barbara? Thanks for having me.
Good. Thanks for taking the time to be with us today. So, all right. So I was telling the audience last segment that we dragged ourselves all the way to the West Side to in LA traffic to see this movie with about, oh my goodness, it was a few thousand people, I think, there, don't you? It was a really...
It was a packed theater and very attentive, very into what was happening there. It was quite something.
Yeah, it was. And there were the usual people dressed like elves and things like that. You know, not a lot of them, but they were there. You know, wherever you have any kind of Tolkien thing, there seems to me that the people show up in their costumes. So anyway, before we get going here, though, with talking about the movie, just maybe give us a little bit about you and your history with Tolkien. Tell them, how did you know, why, what is Bandersnatch? Why did you write that book? And yeah, how did you get interested in Tolkien?
Sure, happy to. So I first read Lord of the Rings when I was in high school. And that was back in the 70s, and everybody was reading Tolkien, right? It became kind of a thing in that time period. And so I read it just because my friends were really interested in it. And to be honest, my first time through, it didn't catch on for me. It's a little bit of a hard book to get into for a number of reasons. And I ended up kind of confused by the eye-splitting names and the vast number of characters and Tolkien's sort of deliberately slow pace through the book. And so I didn't start very well, but I took a deep breath and started in, plunged in a second time. And somehow, the second time through, I really became, I would have to use the word enchanted with it. And the reason I would use that word is there's something about the thoroughness and the care of Tolkien's sub-created world that really captured me. And I felt like I was immersed in story and the smells and the textures of the world that Tolkien had created.
Which probably is the general experience, because when you look at the fan base for his work, I mean, people really, really want to keep revisiting it. I mean, and like you say, you know, the costumes and the assemblies and the, you know, really it's a visceral kind of fan base in a way that a lot of books, you know, aren't.
I think that maybe goes back to something that C.S. Lewis said about wonderful beauty and art. He said, we want to do more than just observe it. We want to somehow become part of it and participate in it. And I think that that's kind of the nature of beauty, the way that beauty awakens our imagination and invites that kind of actual participation in it. But I think what kind of got me hooked on Tolkien wasn't so much the sense of the storytelling and the mythic aspects as much as it was Tolkien's very sophisticated portrayal of goodness. And so you have things like the very ordinary, everyday, sturdy goodness of the hobbits, right? The sort of bread and soup and mushrooms kind of goodness of just doing a good day's work, right? And then you also have the sort of elevated or ethereal goodness of the elves, a very different kind of goodness with a very different feel and texture to it. And yet it's just the beginning of how Tolkien inspires us, I think, to think about goodness and virtue. I think it's part of the reason that the books keep selling the way that they do is because we don't have very many of these compelling visions of virtue. And it is something that we're all hungry for, that we all long for.
Wow. That's a great, great insight. I mean, I was also going to say it's also that he's a really great writer, and that's something else we don't have a lot of right now. I mean, just mastery of craft, you know, and that was something. One thing that the movie does show is the man's kind of obsession with this world he was creating, the languages he was creating, you know, and that he he was really a stickler for detail. But we'll get there in a second. So just say something about Bandersnatch so people check it out.
I was really interested in Lord of the Rings when I finished it. I wanted to find other books like it and ended up discovering that Tolkien was part of this writer's circle, that part of the reason Lord of the Rings is such a good story is that Tolkien read it out loud chapter by chapter to this group of friends. There were 19 members of the group. They met twice a week for 17 years. And that had a profound influence on the quality of the book, because so many people were eagerly listening chapter by chapter and giving input and also giving the gift of anticipation chapter by chapter as it was written. So I became fascinated by these meetings of the Inklings and wanted to get some sense of what it might have been like to be a fly on the wall listening to these guys talk about great stories. And I thought it would be easy to find a great book that gave me that inside look at their interaction and help me understand the creative process better, especially in the context of collaboration. And I couldn't find that book, so I ended up writing it.
Yeah, and it's a very accessible book. You're a PhD and you're a scholar, and this was was based on your dissertation.
My dissertation was related to it, but it wasn't. It's not really my dissertation, no.
Oh, good, because it doesn't read like a dissertation. So I was going to say to anybody out there, it's very accessible. This is a book anybody can read. And what you take away from it is, wow, beauty comes from genius clusters. It comes from groups that people right. come together, and it really makes the production of beauty happen so much better and so much quicker and with much more a sense of intentionality. That's what I got out of it.
Yeah, that's the main point, really, of not only Bandersnatch, but my earlier book about the Inklings called The Company They Keep. And that's that it is normal. It is the normative state of the creative process for there to be lots of opportunities for interaction. So when we talk about writing, good writing is transactional, right? It's not just me in my own head talking to myself. There's a transaction between me and those who want to receive and interact with that story. And since creativity is interactive, the creative process should be more creative and more interactive as well.
Cool. You know what? Hang out there. We will pick this up in the second segment, or the next segment, third segment, where we'll talk about the movie. This is Church of the Masses Radio, and I am Barbara Nicolosi. This is the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network. Hi, this is Barbara Nicolosi, and we're having a women's conference here at the Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina on September 7th, 2019. This is going to be a great, great day for you to come and meet a bunch of new friends, wonderful Catholic women who want to deepen their Catholic faith and their understanding of themselves as women. You know, this era right now that we're in, so much confusion. What is it to be a man? What is it to be a woman? You know, the Catholic Church has a lot to say about this, and we're going to hear about them. We're going to hear about John Paul II's letter on women that he wrote from Mary Danielle Barber. She's going to talk about that. She's going to talk about Mary as a model for all of us. It's a topic that we can never reflect on too much. I'm going to talk about Teresa of Avila and the interior castle and how a mystical marriage is what all of us should be called to, or are called to, as Catholics in our prayer lives, and especially as women in the church. Aileen Blakowski is going to talk about motherhood and homeschooling. And then finally, we have Father Charles Murray. He's going to be the celebrant of the Eucharist. He's going to be here hearing confessions. It's going to be an amazing day. We're going to have an hour of adoration together, time to pray, time to laugh, eat, reflect, grow in our passion for our Catholic faith and our identity as Catholic women. You don't want to miss it. You want to come. You want to bring your friends. You want to bring your daughters, your nieces. That's really an affordable day. So go to VirginMostPowerfulRadio.org, and you can register for this conference or call 877-526-2151. The Women's Conference is going to be a great event for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles area, Southern California Catholics. You don't want to miss it.
buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello again, and welcome back to... Wow, this is already in the half, the second half of the show. It moves so fast, radio. It's just really astounding to me. Maybe it's just that I talk too much, but whatever. Here we are, and we're talking to Dr. Diana Glier about the movie Tolkien that we both saw last night. Diana, we might have to push into the last segment, too, because we're just going to get started here, and I'll have to forego my brilliant lecture about what makes biopics problematic. But for now, let's start it off. And so we both saw this movie last night, Tolkien. It opens in theaters this weekend. What did they get right in this movie, do you think?
Well, there are a number of things that I think they did really, really well. So Tolkien had, not only did Tolkien write really interesting books, but he had a really interesting life. And I think one of the things that they did right is they selected a portion of his life to focus on. So unlike some biopics, they didn't try to like cover, you know, birth to death, cradle to grave. They just said, let's look at the early years, the formative years of this young man's life. And I think that that was really a wise choice. So they're looking at his school days, and they're looking at his experiences as a young soldier in World War I. So that was a good choice. I think as filmmakers, they also did some really beautiful scenes. They paid attention to things like color, texture, place. So they did some beautiful filming. Really loved that aspect of it. And I think that the music and sound design were both really, really smart and really well done.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the production value was great. And if you love Tolkien, such a charge probably to see him in his world, the way they're recreating it. So the recreation of the period for in England at the boys' schools, Oxford and St. Edward's, I think they did a really nice job. It's a small movie, so they don't have a lot of locations, and they keep it pretty. They keep their scope small, but at least they're not trying to do more. Now, where it falls apart for me, though, in that is the World War I sequences. I found them from a production standpoint kind of cringeworthy. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought that they were weak, and I didn't think that they were well integrated into the rest of the vision of the film as a whole. So yes, I agree that those were problematic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the music was beautiful, and it was by a guy named Thomas Newman, who is quite accomplished in terms of composing. He has 52 credits. As a film composer, and it really shows he really knew what he was doing, and he caught if the point of music in a movie is to do two things, one is to heighten the emotions of a scene, and number two is to unify a project, I think he really did, especially the second one. It unifies the movie, having that kind of haunting score going over the top. So I agree with you. I thought the music was very, very well done. So okay.
Yeah, I thought he really nailed it. But, you know, as we've talked about, I think the place where things fall apart is really with the story itself.
Yeah.
There was a lot of confusion, I think, fundamentally in terms of what story they were trying to tell. So what you have is you have kind of three main centers of gravity. You have Tolkien's experience as a young man in this little cluster of friends that he forms called the Tea Club and Barovian Society. So this little cluster of friends, very important to Tolkien's biography, and you have sort of a, I would say, a Dead Poet Society feel of these very creative young men discovering poetry together, encouraging and correcting one another, bringing out the best in one another as creative, people. And so you have that component. You have the component of Tolkien's early courtship with the woman who becomes his wife, with Edith Bratt. So you have this romantic storyline. And then you've got this third piece, which are Tolkien's experience as a soldier And it ends up being, sadly, a little bit of a hash in terms of the way these various elements are introduced, and then a sort of lack of resolution of some of the main story elements.
Yeah, I found it very problematic, the jumping back and forth in time. And even though you're right, they did choose they didn't do the pitfall of a lot of biopics, which is, yeah, as you said, you know, birth to grave. But still, even in the say, like maybe 10-year span that they chose, I don't know exactly how many years that was, to say, but about 10 years, it still felt to me like it was very episodic, and that we were just jumping back and forth. And for some reason, I think what the filmmakers were aware of was they didn't have a lot of drama in this piece. It's a story about a writer and his formative influences, but it seems to me they weren't real sure what those formative influences were. Then number two, they knew, oh, wow, this is a very talky movie where we just have scenes of people talking, young men talking in a bar, young men talking in a library, you know, him talking to his girlfriend in the bedroom, you know, they're talking in the parlor. And so the World War One scenes that they kept intercutting were meant to kind of ramp up some suspense, some kind of dramatic tension, but it doesn't work. It just feels almost kind of exploitive to me. And just like you keep like, okay, now we're going to stop the story and go back and watch him wandering around the trenches in World War One.
Yeah, instead of sort of heightening the drama or ramping up the sense of suspense or narrative tension, those things actually tended to drop it for me, because it just felt like an interruption. So here's how I've sort of decided to think about this film. It's really much less of a story than it is something like this. So you need to imagine some really, really good friends of yours who go on a really, really interesting vacation to a place you'd like to be. But when they can't come back, they've got a slideshow to show you, and it's a little bit jumbled. And you like the individual slides they show. Here we are at the beach, here we are in the restaurant, and so on. But the whole thing just doesn't really tell a compelling story, beginning, middle, and end. And things are a little shuffled in the process.
So what do you think happened there? You know, I'm looking at the writers, and they're both pretty accomplished writers. They, you know, one of them, he's written... looks like 8 other projects, you know, and then the other writer, well, he only has 3 screenplays, but still 3 is 3, you know. So it wasn't their first rodeo. What do you think ruined the screenplay here? The dialogue is not anywhere near to be what it should be. But beyond that, I mean, the story, what do you think happened here?
Boy, sure. There are probably a number of things, but I think that they needed to make some decisions to cut some things. There are a lot of things that end up getting mentioned that don't actually add to the overall impression or give me insight into character. And if you're not going to do those two things, there were a lot of things I didn't know, like, why are you telling me this? Or why are you showing me this? Or why are we spending so much time here when it doesn't either illuminate character or move the story forward? Mm-hmm. So I think there needed to be a different sense of exactly what the movie is for. As I said, I think you've got 3 different sort of centers of gravity. Are we going to tell the war story and the cost of war, especially on a more sensitive soul? Or are we going to make this a romance against the backdrop of these other events that are going on? Or are we going to make this a fellowship movie, a buddy movie about a young man coming of age, you know, in this particular period of time? And I think at some point they just failed to make a commitment to one of those.
Yeah, I think that's a very common flaw in a lot of the biopics that I see and the screenplays that I read. And it comes from a love, really, which is kind of a tragedy, that the people behind the project love the character, and they're like, oh, we have to say something about that, and we have to say something about that, and we have to say something about that. And instead, they need to kind of have a ruthless serving the needs of the audience mentality, which is, we can't tell the audience everything about this guy in 2 hours, so we're going to have to just really be choosy and pick basically one thing and then stick to it. So, yeah, I think the movie is scattered in that. It just keeps changing genre. And mixed genre is never a good thing because it, you know, they all have a different tone to them. So one thing I wanted to ask you about from your standpoint is so the relationship, the love story, does take up a lot of time in the movie, and I found it quite unsatisfying in the way they handled it. I wasn't sure what he saw in her. She seems to be a little bit crabby. You know, she's very unhappy that she's. You know, her whole life is just playing the piano for an old lady. And, you know, and so I was like, okay, why is he falling in love with her? So can you give us a little more of the relationship between Tolkien and Edith and what does the love between them was based in?
Sure. So for people who don't know much of the story, Tolkien was orphaned fairly early on and was in a boarding house and ended up as a young man falling in love with another, with a young lady who was also an orphan and also in this situation. And so that fact alone might give you a little bit of background of how these two are attracted to one another. They've both been through a great deal of loss and a great deal of difficulty. They don't have families. They're in a location that they don't particularly like, and they don't have the means to really to do much. So they're very, very dependent. And so they would be drawn to one another simply from that lack of a full and robust support. So that's part of it. I think that they were also, the other thing is that they're both basically artistic souls. She's more of a musician. His love is language. It's not literature as much as it is philology. And so from an early age, he's enchanted just by the sounds of words. And he is, from an early age, inventing languages just for the sheer pleasure of it and thinking linguistically, which is not a very typical background. So I think that you have these two artistic souls who both really appreciate and understand that sort of approach to the world, or that way of understanding life itself.
You know, if they had given us two scenes based in what you just said there, I think it could have made the movie work so much better. You know, that just, mm-hmm. just a couple of scenes that would make that connection more than, oh, here are two beautiful young people. Of course, they're going to fall in love with each other. You know, it's just like, you know, too often bad movies rely on that, you know. So, and you just mentioned the philology thing, which, to tell you the truth, I had forgotten when I watched the movie. I just figured he was a literature professor. And it's like, oh, no, he was a language guy. Can you say something about that?
Sure. He, like I said, he invented languages from the time that he was young. And the interesting thing, I think, about The Lord of the Rings is that its foundation is not in character or storytelling. Its foundation is in his love for language. He invented the languages first, the people second, the world third, and then the story.
Cool. You know, hold on to that. I think can you hang on to the next break, Diana?
Sure. Happy.
Okay, great. So stay tuned to Church of the Masses.
Welcome, Daniel. You're on the line. What's on your mind, brother?
Hi, I just wanted to share a testimony about Virgin Most Powerful Radio. I had a buddy at work who, you know, he's a lukewarm Catholic guy, and I wanted him to start listening to the Terry and Jesse show, so I kept telling him to download the app, and he kept putting me off. So one day, I grabbed his phone, and I downloaded the app for him. I went on vacation, and you know, I kept telling him to listen to it. He was kind of put me off. I came back from vacation. He comes to my cubicle, and he says to me, "Hey, man, I've been listening to Terry and Jesse's show, and it's great. And it's made a big impact in his life. The guy, he's going to weekly adoration a couple times a week. He goes to the mass in the morning. Mm-hmm. He's an on-fire Catholic, and he promotes the Terry and Jesse show and the Virgin Most Powerful Radio."
Wow. Daniel, what a testimony. And I want to encourage our listeners to get those cards by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and do what Daniel's doing. Go out and spread the faith by inviting people to listen to Virgin Most Powerful. Daniel, thanks for your testimony, brother. God love you.
You're welcome.
This is Terry Barber reminding you, there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity, be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show. And they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello again, and welcome back to Church of the Masses. We're in our last segment here, and we are talking about the Tolkien movie that is opening in theaters this weekend. My guest is Dr. Diana Glier from Azusa Pacific University, and she's the author of the book Bandersnatch, which is about the Inklings. You can find it on Amazon.com. And so we are talking about what we thought of this premiere. We went last night here in Hollywood, sat with a couple thousand people and watched the film on spool. And so, yeah, so far we're kind of giving it a thumbs down. I have to admit, when I read all the critics' treatments of it, and it's got a 48% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, I thought, well, they're probably just being hard on it because it's a Christian subject. But they keep the guy's Christianity quite a bit it's just a very minor thing in the movie. In fact, you don't see him having really much engagement at all with it. It's mainly there's a priest in the movie, but that's it. We don't see much else of his. How did you feel about that, Diana, the way they treated his Christianity? Do you think they gave it too short shrift? Should it have been more a part of this formative years part? What do you think?
I've heard that they actually filmed some scenes of him much more as a man of faith, of him receiving Eucharist, of him making confession, and so forth, and the part of that, especially in his earliest boyhood years. And they thought that that slowed down the introductory sections too much. What I would say is, for a Hollywood movie, I was pleased to see that they didn't make the priest, his guardian, into a more evil or difficult
character. Yeah, that's a plus.
Even though he was a little, he was harsh, he wasn't perhaps, very well-rounded, very well-drawn. At least he didn't, he wasn't a kind of a stereotypical villain like we see so often. So I guess that was sort of a plus or a positive aspect. But yes, faith was very important to Tolkien, and I think it's unfortunate in trying to get a sense of the man and including so many different details about his background that wasn't highlighted.
Do we know, there was the one quick moment where he's in the chapel in school and all the boys are singing this Protestant hymn, and he kind of looks at it like, I don't know this one, and you get a sense, okay, he's an outsider there. Do we know how he felt about being a Catholic in, Anglican England of his day, where there weren't maybe a lot of Catholics?
That wasn't an issue, but I think that scene serves primarily just to show his sense of being a misfit. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of a way of telegraphing that concept more than it is a comment on Catholicism or Protestantism.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm just wondering about the actual man. Do we know how he felt? Did he feel? Because I know every so often, some authors that I'll read, and then I'm trying to think of who. Carol Houselander is one I read, and she's kind of conspicuously the only Catholic in her group of artists. Everybody else was Anglican, do we know anything about Tolkien, how he felt about being the only Catholic in the room?
He wasn't. The Inklings were actually more Catholic than Protestant.
Interesting.
So.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't an issue.
Okay.
That comes up in his biography. There are some really great biographies of Tolkien, by the way, if the listeners are interested in learning more of the true story or just learning a little bit more. The standard biography of Tolkien by Humphrey Carpenter is really, really good, very, very readable and accessible. And if people are interested in this early period, a man named John Garth has written a terrific book about Tolkien's early years called Tolkien and the Great War. And I recommend either of those if people really want to do that kind of a biographical reading or get some more of that background. For the film itself, what I would say is It has some lovely moments. And if you're interested in going and learning more about Tolkien's life, if you can sort of suspend your desire for a rollicking good story and just appreciate those kind of beautiful, tender moments, some lovely filming, those can be very satisfying. I'm reading reviews all the time that many, many people are moved to tears. And it's more the accumulation of some of these different scenes and some of these different situations than it is the sort of compelling narrative itself. And so there is some goodness there, and it's it may be worth for some listeners to go take a look on that score.
You made a neat point last night when we were driving home that Shadowlands got C.S. Lewis's personality wrong, but it was a better story. This one, maybe, you know, do you felt that, okay, they were getting the guy maybe better, but it was just not a great told story. Do you want to, did I get that right?
Yeah, that's an observation that was made by my friend Michael Ward, and I think that his observation is really, really key. So when you're looking at a movie like this, you've got two separate questions you're really considering. Is it good biography, and is it good film, right? And so the movie Shadowlands, it tells about C.S. Lewis and the loss of his wife, Joy Davidman, is terrific film. It's just, I can't watch it without weeping, and I know every time what's going to happen. But it's a complete distortion of the events and also of the character of C.S. Lewis. Huh. And with this one, they've got Tolkien, they're not bad at capturing something of Tolkien's actual mindset, his personality. Although, again, in terms of character development, it's surprisingly shallow for a two-hour film. Yeah. But it just doesn't hold together well as a story. And how ironic when you're celebrating not just Tolkien, one of the greatest storytellers of all time, but a group of young men committing their life to story and to the impact of poetry and how it has the potential to have a life-changing difference. How ironic that telling that story is done in such an unsatisfying way.
Yeah, I really have to second that. In fact, I think I said to you coming out of there, the problem here is you made a movie about a genius, but he doesn't say one brilliant thing in the whole movie. You know, it's like you're trying to put words in the mouth of this man who is brilliant, and the character just doesn't have any brilliance about him because the writers didn't have that to put in there. It's always a tricky thing, the writer to represent someone who's a genius, that they themselves have to have found some genius to show. Otherwise, you're telling the audience, yeah, this guy's a genius, just take our word for it. You know, the review, I'm looking at the review here from the New York Times, and they critique it. It says, this picture about the pre-fame days of the author J.R.R. Tolkien teems with many on-the-nose moments. You know, that's the worst insult we can give in Hollywood. It means there's no subtext, that everybody is saying exactly what they're feeling. There's no other level to anything. Everything is just one level. And I felt that too. I felt like all the characters, especially the boys, the friends, everybody was one-dimensional. It's like, oh, here's the jokester, here's the, you know, the serious one, here's the one who's got issues with his father, you know, whatever. So so that's unfortunate because a man like Tolkien deserves better. A storyteller like Tolkien deserves a story with a little bit of brilliance and subtext.
Well, you know, I started this conversation by pointing out that what really drew me into The Lord of the Rings is the richness of the subcreated world. And I think that while I was watching the Tolkien movie, it was that quality that was so lacking. When I'm watching a movie, I don't want to sort of watch myself watch the movie, if you know what I mean. I want to be lost in it. And it just doesn't have that quality. And that's really unfortunate. Tolkien deserved better.
Mm-hmm. Looking here at the Newsday review, and I'd like to hear what you say about this. So they say that the highlight of the movie is the performance by Nicholas Hoult in the title role. I say Tolkien has plenty to recommend it, beginning with a more than credible performance by Nicholas Hoult. I don't think I agreed with that. I felt he was kind of floundering around looking for the role, like he didn't quite have much help from the screenplay. But what did you think about the performances?
I think the performances overall were good. I think Derek Jacobi was mind-blowing. I think he was really, really great. And even though he's not on screen much, he's just so, so good. So very, very present. I would say that I think that the main characters did the best that they could. The actors did the best they could. But the script that they had to work with really didn't give them much room, much scope.
Mm. Yeah. I thought Lily Collins. She didn't have much more to do than pout. Really, you know, they didn't give her much to do, and that's unfortunate because we need more than that, you know, in characters, especially when you're talking about real people and people that are fascinating, you know. So,
right.
Yeah. So I don't know what happened there. These are basic beginner mistakes in screenwriting. And the people that were making the movie are not beginners. This is like the sixth feature film by the director. It's about the fifth screenplay of one of the writers. I think probably what happened was that their love for this guy overwhelmed their better instincts as storytellers. Huh? Interestingly,
I don't know that I would say their love for him did, but perhaps their familiarity to it. And so the people who I'm hearing who are really getting more out of the film are people who are sort of bringing some of the backstory with them, because the film doesn't give that much. If you start out not knowing very much about these characters or the situation or their story, then it's really hard to get enough from a given scene. But if you sort of, you know, come with an expectation of kind of already knowing some of these things, and a movie shouldn't depend on that. You should be able to just be swept up into it and have that sense that the movie is doing the work. But I think the people who are really being moved by it, being engaged with it, are people who are able to bring a little bit more to it.
Sure. Yeah. I think that if you go in knowing, and my sense of the audience we were with was that a lot of them knew what was going on because they were laughing at things that with a kind of familiarity that I didn't have, you know, and it was like, oh, that means a lot to me because I know what's going on here. And I felt like there were a lot of people in the audience who brought to the movie, you know, a lot of knowledge, and that made them, you know, enjoy it in a whole other way than I was missing there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
sure.
So kind of as we wrap up here. So what do you think? Is this a thumbs up? It's a thumbs down? Is a qualified thumbs up or thumbs down? Would you tell people, yeah, go see it, or wait till it comes on Netflix?
I would say that this is one of those, it depends. Mm-hmm. I think for some people, it's going to be refreshing to see a movie that celebrates friendship, that celebrates creativity and goodness, that has just some beautiful filmmaking and a more, I want to say, sedate pace, but in the good sense of the word. Those of us who aren't going to be getting in line for an Avengers movie because we're just not that interested in those sort of, you know, shoot 'em up films. Those people who are looking for something that is more of a period piece. I think that there's a lot here. I think that people who are already somewhat interested in learning a little bit more about Tolkien, who knows something of his background or who knows something about the history of this period and are interested in it from that point of view, I think that they'll probably like it. If people are looking for a Friday night chance to just get away from it all and to be swept up in a great and dramatic event, they're not going to enjoy it. There's just not enough. The film doesn't give us enough of that kind of enough.
And there you have it. So it's a qualified thumbs up if this is your thing. So this is Barbara Nicolosi. Thank you very much, Diana, for being with us. Church of the Masses Radio on the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network.
St. Faustina's Prayer for Priests. O my Jesus, I beg thee on behalf of the whole Church, grant it love and the light of thy Spirit, and give power to the words of priests, so that hardened hearts might be brought to repentance and return to thee, O Lord. Lord, give us holy priests. Thou thyself maintain them in holiness. O divine and great High Priest, may the power of thy mercy accompany them everywhere and protect them from the devil's traps and snares, which are continually being set for the souls of priests. May the power of thy mercy, O Lord, shatter and bring to naught all that might tarnish the sanctity of priests. For thou canst do all things. Amen. Virgin Most Powerful, pray for us.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.